This episode of WDW Today is being sponsored by MEI and Mouse Fan Travel. And you know what? With the holidays coming up and you're going to get together with your family, why not plan a Walt Disney World vacation? Why not have MEI and Mouse Fan Travel help you plan that trip? After all, you're going to want to get back down to the world and experience all those great attractions, all make new memories with your family down there. And MEI and Mouse Fan Travel is here to help you make that a reality. They're going to get you the best possible deal out there, not just today, but every day between now and when your trip actually happens. Because as you know, deals and discounts are always changing, and MEI and Mouse Fan Travel is here to help and make it simple, easy, and affordable for you. Check them out right now at mousefantravel.com.
Bringing the world to your world, this is Walt Disney World Today. Here are Mike Scopa, Len Testa, Mike Newell, and your host, Matt Hochberg.
It's Wednesday, December 10th, 2014, and this is episode 1433 of WDW Today. I'm Matt Hochberg of StudiosCentral.com and RoyalCaribbeanBlog.com. Joining me on today's show is Len Testa, co-author of The Unofficial Guide to Walt Disney World, and he's also the host of the Disney Dish with Jim Hill podcast. Welcome to the show, Len.
How's it going, Matt?
Outstanding. Also joining us on today's show, Mike Newell of Mouse World Radio. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Hey, boys. I literally walked in the door an hour and 10 minutes ago.
Wow.
From Reunion.
Well, Scopa did not. He's stuck somewhere in transit there. So it's just the three of us on this episode of WDW Today.
We could make it if we try.
And we're going to answer
you. Just the three of us. You and I.
We're answering your listener questions, and of course you can email your questions, it's questions with an S, at WDWToday.com. And our first is from Howie Berman of Columbia, Maryland, who writes, "Greetings, gang, you never let me down, so don't blow this one. No pressure. I apologize in advance for the length of this email. I like the sound of my own typing. I had previously emailed all of you about a trip we're planning to Walt Disney World for my 40th birthday in December 2015. It will likely be a combo on and off site trip with 5 to 7 days in the parks. Myself, wife, daughter, age 5, and son, age 3. Well, things just got a little interesting. I just found out that I have a conference I'll need to attend for work in October 2015 in Anaheim. I haven't been to Disneyland in 15 years. Best part is that travel and accommodations for myself and my family will be covered. We would probably do 3 days in the parks at Disneyland, but stay off-site. I've been looking at the Disney Premier Passport, which costs $1,029 per person, and I'm trying to determine if it's worth doing, even if it's just for myself, to qualify for dining and other discounts. Here's what I believe I would spend if I went the traditional ticket route. Mm-hmm. Three day Disneyland ticket, $226. 3 days parking Disneyland, $48. A 7 day Disney World base ticket, $345.06. We're not park hopping types. 3 days parking Disney World went off site, $51. Total out of pocket costs, $670.06. So I would need to make up roughly $360 in discounts to break even. Is this doable? Are there any other hard costs that I'm missing in my analysis other than tickets and parking that may make this gap even smaller? From what I read on the website, it doesn't appear that the 10 to 20% dining discounts require tables in Wonderland with this type of pass, or am I mistaken?"
So the hotel's already taken care of, right?
That, at least for
Anaheim.
For Anaheim, yes. Okay. He doesn't mention the Disney World hotels, but that's not related to park tickets, just he's looking at hard costs that the ticket would essentially cover.
So typically the AP discount for hotel rooms is $5 or 5% better than what the general public gets. So it's a little bit, but it's not much. So let's say that they're spending $200 a night on a hotel room, or that's the base rate. That means that they would get $10 per night extra by having an AP, and it's what, a $300 and some difference?
Mm-hmm. 360.
So you have to stay 36 days to break even on the hotel discounts, assuming no other discount was available.
Right. The dining discounts are true. I used them actually a couple times. We were at a reunion at Beer Garden. I saved 10%. At the Hollywood and Vine, I saved another 10% on there. So they do work with the sit-down restaurants. I mean, granted, 10% of these bills are $5 or something like that if you're lucky.
But, yes, but to save the – if it's 10%, to save the $360, you would need to spend through a combination of hotels and dining, $3,600 more.
Right.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, this year is the first year I did not get a premier pass for Disneyland and Disney World because the economics of it didn't make sense. I know. I just got a regular, I think I got a three day park hopper. And the thing about the 3 day park hopper too is even if you buy it in advance,
mm-hmm.
or this is for Disneyland, if you buy it in advance, you can still get morning magic hours at one park with a pass, even if you're not staying on site, if you buy the 3 day advance pass. So, I mean, given that, given the economics of it, and given the fact that most of the benefits are available elsewhere, I don't know, man. I don't see how that's economically viable.
Okay. Next, we have an email from Nick in Virginia. Good afternoon, podcast crew. I'm currently writing this email from my fabulous room at the Polynesian Village Resort. I know many people out there are currently very down on this resort due to the widespread construction going on, but I'm here to tell you it's not bad at all. This is a good email because all of us should actually just stay
there. We were just there.
Yes, so here we go. This is my first day at the Polynesian. We usually stay at the Beach Club, but we decided to switch it up this trip and stay here to use the monorail since we knew it would be at the Magic Kingdom a lot and be attending Mickey's Very Merry Christmas Party. So the convenience of being on the monorail loop seemed great. I've eaten at both Kona and Ohana many times before, so I was stoked to finally stay in one of the rooms for the week. We are on the third floor of the
Aorta
building, and have a view of the monorail whizzing by. You can't beat that. Now, granted, there's a lot of going on at the pool and in the Great Ceremonial House, but the rooms themselves are fantastic, and it's still very quiet around the building itself. We've really enjoyed the food offerings at the newly refurbished Cap'n Cook's, and the Tonga Toast is exactly the same as it was before in upstairs at Ohana, but cheaper. I think he means Kona, but cheaper.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah. The pork nachos for lunch are amazing. The new pineapple lanai is also a nice place to stop for you on your way to and from the parks to have a nice cold treat in a quiet, peaceful setting, even if it isn't self-serve anymore. And my favorite restaurant in all of Walt Disney World, Ohana, is completely unaffected, in my opinion, even with all the construction in the other parts of the building. As soon as you're in the restaurant and seated at your table, you totally forget what else is going on at the resort, and you just enjoy the wonderful food they bring to the table. I know some of the listeners have written into the show saying the food seemed off or tough. We didn't have that issue at all. From start to finish, the food was excellent, and I thought the meat and shrimp offerings were some of the best we've ever had there. All this while sitting at the perfect window side table with a view of Cinderella's castle. So all in all, I would definitely tell the listening audience out there to not shy away from the Polynesian during its refurb for either a stay here or just coming to dine at one of the restaurants. It's been a stellar stay for us here, and it's now my second favorite resort right behind the Beach Club. So what do you guys think? You agree? Disagree?
Yeah, you know, we were there. I checked in Tuesday. I got in a couple days before reunion, and I gotta say, you know, overall, even with the construction, it was still a great experience. The I really like with Ohana how they've separated out the waiting area from, instead of being in front of Tambu Lounge, to that seating area that's now roped off, because it really frees up Tambu Lounge for people who want to go there to the bar. I think that's great. I thought the food at Captain Cook's was great. They actually have had the pork nachos. I really like them quite a bit. Yeah, I thought it was really good. The construction, you know, most of the stuff that they were doing around the buildings themselves, I didn't mind. There was still a lot of construction going on at the bungalows. I really do think that affects the view at Hawaii.
Yeah.
And not in a good way. On the other hand, the people who are going to have those views from the bungalows, it's going to be unparalleled. You know, it's interesting because if you look at it this way, right? If you take away Hawaii, the Hawaii building, lots of other buildings would have really good views of the Magic Kingdom, right?
Yep.
So who's to say that, you know, if the bungalows are ruining the view for Hawaii is ruining the views for everybody else? You know, it could just be a cascading thing. But overall, I thought it's pleasant. I really like the staff. The concierge staff was super helpful. Really liked them a lot. Thought it went really well. I would definitely stay there again. And the rate we got was just phenomenal.
Yeah, so the in-room experience I thought was amazing. It was large rooms, lots of space. I agree about the quietness. I never heard a peep out of anything else.
Yeah, I love the new bathroom designs.
Yes. It was all – in-room experience was phenomenal. Really, really liked it. The Great Ceremony House is really disappointing. I mean, it's just – with the construction.
It's just curtains.
It's just curtains, so it's like you just can't not miss it. So it's not as beautiful or as it was before. But, I mean, we were at the Tambu Lounge. Newell and I were there literally every night. And it was fine. We had a great time. I think I agree about the construction line, especially in the daytime. Mm-hmm. You know, the construction at the DVC units out in the water. I mean, those they definitely ruin the view. There's no question about it. But I mean, would I not stay there? I don't think I would go that far. I think it's still a great resort. The ability to – you can still see the fireworks at night. You can – the easy access to the Magic Kingdom, phenomenal. It's so – yeah, I think I tend to agree with Nick in this email. I think it's generally mostly positive. I really – I'm trying to think like what's – probably the worst part. The worst thing I can tell you is that the walk now, if you – one of the old tricks is that you can actually – with the monorail, you can go to the TTC, right? So if the resort monorail is for whatever reason isn't working well, you take the express back and back or forth and no problem. Now the walk is significantly longer because it goes around the whole construction.
Yeah.
It went from like maybe like a – it probably adds another 5 or 10 minutes depending on how fast or slow you walk.
Oh, but, man. After that first day in the Magic Kingdom, I was walking so slow.
I broken feet. Yep.
Man.
I agree with what Nick said about Ohana. We ate there on Monday night, and it was phenomenal. Had no issues with the food whatsoever. It was might have been the best one yet.
By the way, one thing we did learn about the Polynesian, I don't know if others know about this, Mike Newell alerted me to it.
Uh-huh.
So give him credit for the spy report.
A spy report. Spy report.
Which was the – you can actually – I don't know if this was a club level, Mike, or anybody can order Ohana room service.
I know. I was told I saw it in my room, and I think Janine also confirmed it. But I forget. It was either Janine or the Thompsons that saw it in their menu too.
Okay, so you can order. It's like $40 a person, and you order,
and it's the same meal. It's the same. I took a picture of it. I'll have to post it. Cool. But I was surprised at that. And getting to the noise, real quick, I had a garden view in the Hawaii building. If anyone's familiar with that building, it's it just faces the garden. But I heard more noise from Richard Petty than I did from the construction.
Yeah, I only heard the construction. We were at the bar at night after like 11 o'clock. They started working, but that was in the bar in the Great Ceremonial Hall. So my room. Right. It was very, very silent. You have to ask Scopa because we were next door to him. So you got to ask if he heard my daughter screaming or anything, that was – or us screaming at my daughter, whatever the case may be, if you could actually hear it.
I was next door to Len and I didn't hear anything.
I was next door to Newell and I think Becky or Annette and I didn't hear anything.
Yeah. Cool.
It was funny. I noticed that my bathroom, the floor squeaked whenever I stood in front of the sink. And I was like, okay, the people in floor two probably know when I'm shaving every morning, but other than that, that was fine, yeah.
Let's go to our next emails from Gerald from Palm Mall, Pennsylvania. I'm intrigued by the use of Lyft and Uber at Disney, both as a passenger and a driver. I come from Pennsylvania where the use of this app will get you fined, arrested, and your car impounded. What is Disney's attitude towards the use of ride-sharing apps?
Disney, I don't think, has a problem with it either, I mean, one way or the other. I mean, you can always say you're picking up a guest and nobody's going to care. I think the is it Lyft that puts the mustache icons on the front of your car?
Yes.
I think Disney might start recognizing that, but Uber, they don't. I think the bigger question is you know, if you're using it to go like to and from the airport, the Orlando airport probably will have something to say about Uber and other car sharing services. They're not insured. They're not regulated.
They did have so I saw a sign for this at the luggage pickup.
Mm-hmm.
And what they had was, it was a sign. It didn't forbid it. It just warned you that they're not licensed. And therefore, this is totally a sign, by the way, the taxi commission, I'm sure, paid for or negotiated to get. But basically, it was a warning you not to trust them. But it didn't say they were illegal or not available. But it warned people against their use that they're not
unlicensed.
Yes.
Yeah, unlicensed, yeah.
It's like in New York when you get those signs at LaGuardia with the guy in the cap, like the old taxi drivers. Don't trust these
what
guys.
Can I take you? Perhaps to beautiful uptown.
Yeah, beautiful uptown. I'll take you there for
$10. Yeah. That, you know, but it's every city's trying to regulate Uber just to get the licensing in and make sure that they don't ruin the taxi drivers.
I heard in New York, actually, the medallion prices are actually falling.
Oh, they're plummeting. They're down by like what 20-some percent. Did you see that?
It's huge. Yeah.
I totally understand it because that's a ton of competition. I haven't tried it yet. In fact, Bob and I earlier this week talked about how we were going to test Uber, Lyft, Airbnb, another sort of sharing websites for the next edition of the Unofficial Guide. The thing with Uber and Lyft, we'll see. I've used Lyft and Uber in different cities and had, you know, decent experiences with them. I've used Airbnb in different cities and had really good experiences with it. My big concern with Airbnb in Orlando is I don't know how you would ever beat a vacation home.
Yeah.
In Airbnb, you know, when I've used it, my first experience was in New York and it was fantastic. I've had other experiences in other places where they're interesting homes, but you can definitely tell that people live there and the cleanliness level isn't the same and the amenities aren't anywhere near the same as a vacation home.
I think Airbnb really benefits cities that have really expensive hotel rates like San Francisco, New York, and cities like that. In Orlando, there are so many hotels and a lot of them do, and then the vacation home market in itself is huge.
And I don't see Airbnb making any significant headway when competing against vacation homes, especially like all-star vacation homes where they're maintained. You can call people if something goes wrong. I mean, it's a completely different thing. So, you know, Lyft and Uber, I kind of see Airbnb. It's going to be that's going to be a tough sell for me.
Cool. If any of our listeners have experience with at least Lyft or Uber, let us know. You can email us questions@wdwtoday.com. Next, we have an email from Brett in Indiana. Hey, gang, love the show. Would like to get your input and suggestions on touring all four parks in a single day using new FastPass Plus system. A few years ago, my family hit all the major attractions in all four parks in a single day by making good use of the old FastPass system. It was mid-February, so the crowds were not too bad. The longest standby line wait was about 35 minutes for Test Track. We had our own rental car, so time between the parks was minimal. Also, we're not staying on property, so could not make use of extra magic hours. We visited Studios first, rode Toy Story, Tower of Terror, and Star Tours, and then left the park a little after 10 o'clock. Park and roller coaster was down for the day. Next, we visited Epcot, immediately picked up a FastPass for Soarin' for about 2. We rode Test Track, Mission Space, and had lunch at Via Napoli, and rode Soarin', and we're leaving the park about 3:15. Then we arrived at Animal Kingdom time to ride Dinosaur and Everest before the park closed at 5. We walked into the Magic Kingdom about 5:30, grabbed FastPass for Space Mountain for later in the evening, had dinner, watched the parade, castle projection show, fireworks, and then made our way around the park riding every single ride except Splash and Peter Pan because they were closed. We walked out of the park at 12:30, having successfully conquered the world. My question is, how would you recommend we use FastPass Plus to accomplish this again?
Wow. So the tough thing is making your choosing which park to make your advanced FastPasses for.
Yeah, I was thinking if you're going to the system land, I still think Epcot would be the best one to make use of because you're hitting that one prime time.
Here's the problem. You have to make them within one-hour windows, and the windows can't overlap. So if you made one for Soarin'.
Oh, right. I see what you're saying.
From 9 to 10, you couldn't use Test Track until 10 to 11, which automatically puts you in the park for at least an hour, right?
Yeah. I mean, best case scenario, you're in the park for at least for 3 hours at the minimum.
Yeah. So it doesn't make any sense because you could just get the three standby lines one fast pass and two standby lines, and you wouldn't be in the park for 3 hours. So that doesn't make any sense. You could what I would do is if you're starting off at Epcot, you know, use your FastPass for Soarin', then get in the single rider line for Test Track, and then leave. And that wouldn't make any other FastPasses for any other attractions. So if you go in and make the one for Soarin', then delete everything else. And then do Soarin', do the single rider for Test Track, get Spaceship Earth out of the way when you're leaving the park. You should be leaving, you know, within an hour or so. And then you're free to make day of FastPasses at the rest of the parks. And one of the things that we noticed when we were in the Magic Kingdom on Thursday is that there were several attractions, and they're secondary attractions, but, you know, Buzz Lightyear, It's a Small World, things like that, where fast passes were available for the time period that began 5 or 10 minutes from now. So when we were in the Magic Kingdom and it was, you know, 6 p.m. or 6:30 p.m., there were, you know, 6:45 It's a Small World fast passes available, which means you could just walk up to a kiosk, make it, ride, you know, 6:45, be out of the ride by 7, make another one for something else. And that's a way to, you know, if you can do that during the day, that's a way to you know, to get through lots of fast passes. I mean, with that, you might be able to get 8 or 10 in a day.
Yeah. I think the other thing that he greatly benefited from was the fact that it sounded like the park, Magic Kingdom, was open until, what, 1 a.m.? So that's a big deal versus a day where the latest park maybe is only open until maybe 9 or even 10 o'clock. So without extra magic hours. So assuming you could do that, that'll make a huge difference as well because that builds in an extra, 3 to 4 hours, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah. All right.
So that's interesting.
Next, we have an email from Rob from Toronto, Canada. Greetings from the Great White North. After he successfully gave Amazeballs advice regarding my recent trip to Disney, I have decided to book another trip for February 2015 and have a question regarding downtown Disney parking. I recently stayed at the Hilton Orlando Lake Buena Vista when walked to downtown Disney. Now that my next trip will be off property, staying right by the outlets on Vineland Road, what do you recommend for strategic transportation to get to downtown Disney? I've heard some people say drive to the TTC, walk to the Polynesian, take the bus to downtown Disney.
Oh my God, that's exhausting.
Yeah, that's terrible. What would you guys do? And if cabbing is an option, is it easy to get a cab out of downtown Disney as well? Meaning, is there cabs up there with cabs waiting to go from downtown Disney to wherever I choose?
Yeah, there are. But they're coming from 535 in Vineland?
Yep.
You're like around the corner from downtown Disney, aren't you?
Yeah, but it's not. I mean, I wouldn't characterize
it. I wouldn't walk. No. No, it's because you have to go through the Hotel Resorts Boulevard or whatever it is, right? Yep.
So one of the things, they have that brand new parking garage open also.
Yeah.
I believe it's on the Marketplace side. I haven't actually been there. In fact, I haven't even driven down that road in my last two trips there, just completely off my radar. But
I don't want to drive down that road.
I know, exactly. That's probably why. So that is an option. It's not theoretically, the parking is a little bit better now with the garage. It's across the street, like by that Hess station.
Yeah.
So there's an option there. The other option, of course, you can go to the – I don't think this – go to Saratoga Springs. You can go walk from there. I've done that many times.
You can walk from Saratoga Springs. But yeah, but if you're walking from your resort to Saratoga Springs to downtown Disney, that's still a hike. What about –
I'm sorry. Driving to Saratoga.
Oh. How are you going to get in?
I'm going to the bar. Trust me, they're hurting for any business that can come to Saratoga.
You are? Let me buy you first drinks on us, sir.
Yeah, trust me, you'll have no problem getting into Saratoga Springs. They have tons of parking and not a lot of guests. So I would say that could be one option. Of course, the cab is a simpler option because it's going to cost you more, but then you don't have to worry about the parking situation. You'll get from point A to point B the fastest with the least amount of issue, because as we all know, parking at downtown Disney can always be a challenge.
Yeah.
So
the other thing I would say is take a look at the Lynx bus system and see if there's anything in your from the resort that you're staying at to anywhere near downtown Disney. There's typically a stop. I know there's one at least right on the edge. You know where the hotel resorts, the downtown Disney resorts start, right on the corner there of downtown Disney and I guess Hotel Resorts Boulevard, where it sort of splits off. You know when you're driving towards Crossroads and if you're in the left lane, you have to make the left because the road splits off there?
Yes.
That terrible intersection right there where everyone tries to merge over to the right. Yeah. I think right around there is actually a Lynx bus stop. But I don't know where that line comes from or goes to. But you can check that to see if that's anywhere near your resort. If you can get there without having to make a connection somewhere else, that might be your best bet.
Cool. Now, this next email, I know we're late on it. We missed it by literally a week. But what? I still think it's a helpful email because I think people – you know, maybe next year that'll be listening to this, we'll find this useful. So anyway, we're going to read it. It's from Matt from Delanco, New Jersey. Hi, podcast team. Thank you for helping me drop a few pounds as I listen to you guys during my runs as I prepare for our trip in December. We'll be in the world December 6th or 13th and realize that the Christmas taping will be right or the Christmas parade taping will be happening the 6th through the 9th. We plan on spending our first 2 days of our trip at the Magic Kingdom on the 6th and 7th. How will the parade taping affect our visit to the Magic Kingdom? Will it be packed and difficult to get on rides, or will the rest of the park outside of Main Street be less crowded as everyone packs on the Main Street? I'd be curious to hear if any of the team has experienced the Magic Kingdom during this parade taping in previous years. Thanks for all you do and making my 90-minute commute to work much more manageable each morning. Newell, is this commute longer than yours?
How long? 90 minutes?
90.
Add another 40 minutes to his to
wow
come up to mine.
Jeez. All right. So the parade taping. I don't know if you remember doing – I think you and I were there 1 year during like Mouse Fest a couple of years ago.
I've done a bunch. 3 years ago I did it. Yeah.
Yeah. I hate it.
it really clogs up the pedestrian walkways on Main Street. However, with the opening of the paths behind Main Street now, that's really got a lot easier. Did you guys happen to use those during?
Yeah, I did.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I used both sides.
It's really nice.
Wow, this is totally – I didn't even – where – how do you get to them?
So if you're – let's say you're on Main Street. You just go past – while you're on Main Street on the end towards the train station, you know where Tony's Town Square is?
Unfortunately.
Yeah. If you make a right there, You go backstage behind the hat shop and, you know, the crystal glass place. And you end up near the bathrooms between Main Street and Tomorrowland, between the Plaza restaurant and...
Oh, exactly.
And cool. And the same thing. If you go, you know where the Sorcerer's shop is by the fire station at that end, the other end of Main Street?
Yep.
If you go there, those doors will be open. The swing doors that sort of block off the parade route, those will be open. And you end up by the bathrooms near Crystal Palace.
Yep. Yeah.
Nice.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that helps out a lot. So that alleviates the congestion on Main Street. But most of the time, that's the big thing. There's a crowd that they keep in there all day for parade shootings and retapings and stuff like that. Most of the attractions average times are about the same. When things let out, like 6-7 o'clock or so, you know, the people that got free admission to the parks will go. We'll go ride rides, but overall, I don't think it really has an impact on the crowds.
It does ruin the magic. I mean, if you want to get a photo on Main Street, if you want that view of the castle during the day, it's impossible, in fact. And I think the worst thing you can do, though, is actually volunteer to be part of that parade taping because you were literally a slave of Disney's. And it's to me, it looks like one of the worst things you could possibly do. You stand there. They film certain segments. They'll move the parade back to redo it because it stunk. They're going to ask you, be like, all right, look, more excited, more excitement, blah, blah, blah. It's like, all right, we get it, you know. It's not one parade taking. You just happen to be there. They do it all day. I know a lot of people, you know, are like, oh, how can I be in the taping? I want to be on TV. I'm just telling you, I wouldn't want to waste a vacation day on that.
It doesn't look fun at all.
No. Can't say it is, but to each their own, I suppose. All right. Time for our last email of the day, and that means I give Mr. Newell 3 emails to choose from. One gets read today, the other two back in the email queue to be answered later. Ready, Mike?
Let's do it.
Your options are Magic My Way, really? Lost House, Lost Job, Moving to Disney World? Test Track the Musical?
All right, let's go with that one.
All right, last email of the day is from Rick from St. Paul.
Rick?
Some of my favorite Walt Disney World rides are the ones not affiliated with the Disney characters. Don't get me wrong, I love the characters as much as the next guy, but I find the rides such as the Haunted Mansion or Test Track to be much more creative and entertaining.
Preach it, brother.
Does Disney have any new original rides in the works? The most recent ones I can think of are Expedition Everest, Soarin', and Mission Space. This leads me into my next question. Well, let's start there. Any other rides, do we know of any other rides not based on characters?
Well, new ones, Space Mountain, Spaceship Earth?
No, in the works, like coming soon.
Oh, in the works. Sorry.
Got Frozen out.
Avatar Land is not based on a character per se.
Well, it's based on based on a film franchise though.
Yeah.
Rivers of Light.
What?
It's not really the Rivers of Light thing in Animal Kingdom.
Isn't that based on Avatar Land? I mean, isn't
no,
that based on
I, no? I didn't. No, I think because it's going to happen around Asia, so I would hope not.
This leads to my next question. Disney is very successful turning original attractions into movies. Pirates of the Caribbean, huge success. The Country Bears, blood on the saddle. What are your best and worst Disney World original attractions turned movie titles or plots? For example, Test Track the Musical.
Well, Haunted Mansion, the movie, was horrible.
Yeah, pretty much Pirates was huge. Good, in a good way. That Mission to Mars movie wasn't awful.
Yeah.
It's one of those movies that's like outside on Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock. I'll watch it, honestly. It's just
wasn't
like that kind
great.
Of
great. Yeah.
It wasn't great. No. But it wasn't nearly as bad as The Country Bears, honestly, was one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
Really?
Yeah, really, really bad. Haunted Mansion was dumb, but somewhat enjoyable. I mean, I sat through it.
I actually went to see that in a theater.
I did too. I wasted very good money on that.
What about the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror movie?
It just again for a Disney World fan, it's cool because they filmed it at the attraction, so you can see certain things. Like, oh, I know where that is.
Right.
That's
right.
The only cool thing about it. And Steve Guttenberg, an American treasure. But
otherwise, greatest actor. Yeah. He's the greatest actor. It's true.
That's a great line, by the way. In the America's greatest. Newell interrupts you. America's greatest actor. Steve Guttenberg.
And if you haven't checked out the bloopers, you got to go back and check out the bloopers.
Yeah, Monday's episode. Very good stuff. All right. So what if you guys were creating your own? Which Disney World attractions could we make into movie titles or plots? I mean, Everest has potential, right? I mean, how hard is it to screw up a Yeti that's chasing you?
How hard is it to screw up one that's actually moving?
Yeah. It'd be like the attraction. It would never move anywhere. He's like, he's right over there.
Don't worry about it. Yeah, don't worry about it.
It's like Japanese animation where it's like they show the same thing and only like one part of the frame moves at any time.
Oh, there's a strange light flashing on it.
Yeah, it's odd.
What else? I mean,
Color River Rapids. It's like a river runs through its sequel.
Or Deliverance.
With chainsaws. A river runs through it with chainsaws.
Kevin Bacon. Again.
Kevin Bacon.
What about Rock and Roller Coaster? You could do sort of like a rock band.
It sounds like a really bad Disney Channel film.
Yeah, it really does, doesn't it?
There's just no way around that.
Tower of Terror has already been made into a movie. Toy Story has already been made into a movie.
I mean, I think the thing, when you look at Pirates of the Caribbean, it's a huge success because it had very, very, very little to do with the attraction.
That's
title.
True.
Yeah, I mean, pirates. Essentially all the background stuff. Yeah, all the background stuff was made
up. That was
up,
it.
Yeah,
a couple lines that they borrowed. That was it. There's nothing about it.
I think they actually, this is a great script, actually. You know, I watched that again on the big screen on the last Disney cruise we were on. I just thought it was just as good. The 18th time I've seen it or whatever is the first. I thought it was really good. What about Space Mountain doesn't sound good. TTA, you can't do anything about that.
They're making the Tomorrowland film, which I think doesn't have much to do with the land.
That's supposed to be good, that film, I hear. Most of the stuff in Fantasyland is about films already, right?
Yeah.
You could do It's a Small World. I wonder what that would be like as a film.
It might be a good one. How about Spaceship Earth, like as a time travel movie?
It sounds like Quantum Leap to me.
Huh. I was looking more at the H.G. Wells version. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, no, actually, now that you mentioned it, it is Quantum Leap the movie.
Kind of Quantum Leap. wasn't there really a Quantum Leap movie?
Was there? I don't know.
Somebody needs to look it up on IMDb.
Starring the one and only Scott Bakula.
Yeah. Scott Count Bakula. Man, what could you do? Big Thunder Mountain Railroad seems like it's the most obvious choice.
That's a good one. There you go.
Yeah, because, I mean, Haunted Mine, I mean, you could do a lot with that, right? Yep. You could play it straight. You could do it as a comedy.
Yeah, I think the key is just, again, like based on Pirates, have very, very little to do with the actual attraction other than, someone saying, this here is the wildest ride in the wilderness. That's there you go. Exactly. That's the only
thing. You could do the visual puns, right?
The goat.
Take some scenery, yeah.
Yeah.
A goat, yeah, exactly. Oh, look at goat.
All right, very good. Well, that'll do it for us today. Don't forget, if you have your questions or emails, feel free to email us questions at wdwday.com. And, of course, our sponsor is MEI and Mouse Fan Travel. And, boy, listen to all these questions about Walt Disney World. Maybe it makes you think, I would like to go back to Walt Disney World again very, very soon. Well, MEI and Mouse Travel is here to help you make that a reality. There's so many great deals coming up in 2015. You want to be there for it. Of course, so much changing at Disney World, and there's just a lot to choose from. So, go to mousefantravel.com right now. Check out all the great deals they've got there. Price a quote for yourself, and before you know it, you're going to have a wonderful Walt Disney World vacation planned for you. mousefantravel.com. For Lantessa, Mike Scopa, and Mike Newell, I'm Matt Hotchberg. We'll see you on the next show.
Stupid Judy, stupid energy.
This has been a production of Mouse World Radio.